Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hello and welcome to the Worst Idea of All Time, Season 4, Episode 4, Guy Montgomery. Stop that off-mic chatter, the show begins now.
I was just trying to tell you, Tim, that I'm actually planning a boycott of the Edinburgh Fringe this year until the last week.
Do not put any kind of a date stamp on this podcast. It is immortal and it is to be consumed morning, afternoon and evening at any part of the year you choose. There should be no talk of seasons. It is prohibited, or festivals that fall annually at a particular time.
But if it's truly timeless, I could be talking about going to the Edinburgh Fringe in any year, or not going, as the boycott may stand presently.
Now, that's a good point. Boycotts are forever. Festivals are once a year, but boycotts are forever.
Until they're not. Hiya, Tim, how are you?
Mate, we're talking about every day at the moment, which is good. It's lovely. It's good to hear your voice again so soon. I'm doing well, thank you. I've had a lovely day today. Went to the physio, try and get my knee sorted out.
still haven't got staying problems with that knee.
Yeah, man, it's been 7 years. 7 bloody years. But he's taped it up real good. How about you?
That should sort it out, I always reckon, eh? You got a bone or a cartilage problem, just whack a bit of external tape on it. That should see it, right?
Absolutely. What is skin if not just a bit of tape holding us together?
Yeah, and that tape needs a bit of a tighten around that bloody knee of yours.
Mm.
You got a loose knee.
It's trying to get out, but we've got to keep it in. How's your day been going, Guy?
It's pretty good, thanks, man. I just got home. So the way I watched the film today is I watched 2 hours and 10 minutes of it this morning. I watched in... Not slow motion, but certainly warp speed. Not warp speed forward, but like warped speed. Like it was not good.
Fucking good on you, man. I really tip my hat to you for doing it and doing it immediately as well. You sent me a short video of it. It seemed like nightmare fuel.
Yeah. It really makes a lot of the actions and decisions more deliberate. Also more ominous and
certainly labored.
Yeah, more than anything, Tim, it just sort of slows things down. And anyway, I only watched about half an hour of the movie at that speed before returning to normalcy. And I then went and watched for homework. I'm currently learning how to do improvised comedy at the helm of a wonderful little pyramid scheme called the Upright Citizens Brigade. And as part of the curriculum, you got to watch two improv shows, specifically at the school. And so,
do you have to pay to see them?
No, you don't. You pay a hefty...
Because is how you do a pyramid scheme.
Yeah, that's true. I tell you what, you should. I'll send a letter. So I just watched... it was interesting. It was sort of Sex and the City and then two pretty, you know, ordinary improv shows back to back, which begged the question, you know, what is harder to get through? 2 hours of consecutive subpar improv or Sex and the City in slow motion for the fourth time?
Take that, you fucking improvisers. Right up there with the 2008 absolute dinger, Sex in the City.
So Alice Nedden of Boners of the Heart recently stayed with me here in New York. And when she did, I have a small desk in my room, and on top of which was a piece of paper which was explaining the Herald, which is the what they call the house format at UCB. It's just like a long-form improv game, essentially. And Alice walked into the room and saw that piece of paper on the desk and broke into hysterical laughter what wouldn't have been less than a minute, and then just said, exacerbated through gasping breaths, I just imagined you studying improv at that desk. It is truly the most humiliating practice to acknowledge being interested in or particularly formally educating yourself in.
Fucking hell. You've fucked up in a massive way when that's where you're at, right? Because you get into sort of performing arts because you don't want to do schoolwork, and you get into improvising presumably because you don't want to do any of that kind of book stuff. And yet there you are with a bloody book learning how to do the one presumed escapism.
It was certainly, because I live with myself and I live in my room, and I just hadn't used the desk for about, you know, a week. So that was just the last thing I'd put on top of it. But certainly it provided a fascinating glimpse into where I currently reside professionally.
Well, let's hit up pros and cons, or however this will work, of versing the improv shows that you saw and the movie against one another. So tell me one advantage that the improv show had over Sex in the City.
Spontaneity. I couldn't help but notice the spontaneous nature of the performance.
You are an acute observer of art, yes?
And in a lot of ways, Tim, I actually feel like, funnily enough, the improv probably could have used a bit more rigid structure, or certainly, a judicious edit at certain points. Not like Sex in the City. I keep wanting to call it two, sure. But it's not two. Look, I think all up, they both take an emotional toll, but it's sort of different. With the improv, it's like there's no greater service to it. It's just sort of time stretches out in front of you, and you're just living inside of these sort of silly ideas. There was one woman in the first group who was like what you'd qualify as a middle, you know, a senior student at a university or polytechnic sort of institute, you know, sort of 20 years older than the rest of the group. And I don't want to be ageist, but, you know, immediately her energy was just out of this world nervous. And this is like, you're watching an advanced class. So this is someone who has chosen to not only, like, you know, learn this and practice it, but pay not an insignificant amount of money to continue with the experience. And so I was immediately drawn to her performance in a way that sort of eliminated everything else that was happening on the stage. I was just captivated by her. She would not have spoken more than four sentences over the half hour performance.
Good God.
The amount of times she almost stepped out onto stage and did not, I couldn't count on hands and feet. I was so engrossed by it that I went from sort of being, you know, fascinated and amused by it to sort of feeling slightly worried for her, to just genuinely wondering where she's at in her life for this to be. It was stressful.
I'm feeling very pensive just hearing your recounting of it, to be honest, and I don't want to entertain the notion anymore because it's making me feel a little bit sick.
I'm so sorry. That's how I felt, but then enough time has passed that I've sort of made my peace with it. For you, it's obviously, this is new information, and you haven't even seen this, so you don't even know how funny it was. You just heard about the weird reflective parts. Less to do with her performance, more to do with me. Go ahead.
Can I ask you a question? This is one of those questions that gets formed in your head where you're watching a piece of content when you don't have, full confidence in the people who wrote it and made it. Do you think that the writers of this film know that the country is called Ukraine and not Ukrainia? Because there's a line in the film which is... And there, an old Ukrainia, Miranda, found her new apartment.
That's right. Look, as always, I think the question has to be asked, maybe this is a deliberately written character flaw in Carrie. Well, not necessarily character flaw, but maybe maybe the writers do know exactly what the name of Ukraine is. But Carrie doesn't.
But Carrie Bradshaw don't.
I mean, it's jutted out at me every time as well. I just hadn't thought to bring it up. So I'm glad you have, because I have it written in front of me.
Oh, great.
What is there for it? You know, it's just it's like, have you ever accidentally called Canada Canadia?
Yeah, not often, but it certainly happened.
Isn't it embarrassing as soon as it comes out of your mouth? You just feel this clunky error definitely. Just come rolling off your tongue.
But it kind of, maybe it should be. Maybe they should just roll with it and rename the nation Canadia, just to fit in.
So many people have worked so hard to deprogram themselves from saying that. They'll be absolutely ripped to hear they've got to relearn it. It's going to be a real challenge.
Things change, man. You know, every other country used to be on a system like the imperial system, and now everyone's metric. God bless the United States have really cast their die big time with that one, put a real stake in the ground. But think, you know, time marches forward. And maybe this is time for Canada to reclaim its glorious pronunciation. Do you need to add an I in there somewhere to make it said like that?
Yeah, it'll be between the D and the A at the end.
Canada.
But I just feel like, you know, SJP in the recording booth, when she's laying down some of that sweet VO, she would have felt it coming out sound weird. And they're in old Ukrainia.
It's possible that it, it might be written, it might be not. Carrie Bradshaw, she's known for her japes and puns, but this one, she doesn't seem worldly enough to my mind, that character. I think she's just fucked up, is what I'm saying. Anyway, look, it's one of those things which you're going through the movie, you're going through a smooth bit, and then that bit just comes out at you like a little ridge.
How did you enjoy watching the movie today?
Two parts, similar to yourself. I watched about an hour and 10 minutes before I went and got my knee sawn to, and then came back and consumed the rest of it. It's a bit of a different experience doing this project solo, doing the Watchers solo, guy. It's not as fun, that's for sure.
No. But there is, scientifically speaking, there's quite an enjoyable or interesting element of bringing our findings to one another that is, you know, unique from...
it's true.
We've done it before, but never, like, as the bedrock of the season. I mean...
Yeah.
And also the turnaround that we're looking at here, just to get the work done, is crazy. I think we've done four in 2 weeks, mate.
We've done four, it feels like, inside about 8 days or something. We're watching this a lot at the moment.
We both must have quite a lot on.
Yeah, clearly. It kind of this isn't true, but it feels like you're doing work as well. Like, I feel like it's a good use of a morning, which I'm sure will change before very long.
You know,
but it's like, you know, I'm doing something. Something is being achieved here.
If I'm waking up
first thing and watching the film.
I'm embarrassed and gleeful to confess the same feeling, where I sort of factor it into a day. When I think about it looking forward, or reflect upon a day as I go to sleep, if I've done one of these, I'm like, well, you know, not for nothing, which is ludicrous. Absolutely for nothing.
We clocked in. We turned up in the office. We said hello to everyone. We got the in and out trays. Well, we gave them a dusting, you know. We had a look at them. Didn't get to the bottom of any piles, but we had a thumb through the envelope, seeing if anything looks urgent.
Are you the kind of guy who goes through a pile one by one, or do you sort of, you got three piles, are you just sort of taking stuff off the top and looking at it as you go?
I think I'd be a pile dude if I was in a position that warranted me looking at a lot of envelopes. Yeah, I think I'd want to get a bit of a system. I wouldn't face it without a cup of coffee in front of me as well. I'd need to sort out some piles and a hot steaming cup of Java, which reminds me, I still have not seen our boy anywhere in this picture.
No.
Where's coffee guy?
He's hidden somewhere in one of the frames. I mean, You'd hope so, because if after 52 screenings he doesn't turn up, then something so much more sinister than either of us can imagine is afoot. His shadow lurks in every frame. Before we get into that, though, I just want to ask, are you the same person after that steaming hot cup of Java? So do you think the guy who wants to put a system in place and get ready to go through piles one at a time is the same guy who's looking at three piles after a cup of coffee?
No, I think that you can attest firsthand to the change that happens when I've got low blood sugar and then suddenly put some food in my body. It's not quite as pronounced, but a similar situation does occur pre and post caffeination in the morning for me. So I actually think we're dealing with an entirely different kettle of tin. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
I would say you would rival my wife as being the most qualified person to be able to comment on this, because we don't usually interface with each other in anything approaching a work capacity. You know, it's just take it as it comes for both of us. But you and I, we want to be in some sort of fine fighting form when we're going up against an enemy like this movie.
Yeah, is this movie an enemy of the state? Is it an enemy of Tim?
Oh, of course. It's an announced enemy of Tim. You better believe it.
I love this. I love your system of just creating enemies to motivate yourself. I think it's so good. It's so sound. It's a great motivator.
It really works too. But what were we talking about? Something coffee guy. So no sighting of him. Yeah.
No, cannot find hide nor hair of the guy. Rest assured, he's out there just fucking pounding the streets.
I don't know if he is.
And pounding caffeine. Where else could he beat him?
I reckon he's fucking with us, man. I don't think he was ever in the movie, and I think someone got to IMDb before you did and maybe just put that line in. So they knew what was coming. They knew one day we would get there. I'm actually just trying to look up an actor from the film on IMDb, and it weirdly doesn't seem like they're credited, even though I've seen them in tons of movies and they're in a lot of TV stuff. Paul.
Oh,
should I just dive into my shining light?
Yeah, you go straight into your shining light, mate.
Do you know who I'm talking about, just dropping the name Paul?
Yeah. I've researched him myself, although I've also... he's the asshole at the...
No.
Oh, no.
Unless there's two Pauls. I thought there was Carl, the guy who's the partner who interrupts
Samantha. That is Carl.
I think that's Carl. Paul is one of the interviewees for the position of personal assistant to Carrie Bradshaw.
Yes.
He's the guy who worked as an assistant to a VP at Merrill Lynch, and he's extremely well kept. He's in a sharp looking suit, perfect hair, gorgeous face, and then she sort of says, you know, he lists his credentials and sounds very impressive, and then Carrie Bradshaw asks him, "Why did you want this particular?"
That's right, because his credentials don't directly lend themselves to the job he's applying for.
They're a bit more banking oriented, and she asks why he was interested in this particular position or words to that effect, and he does this lovely, like, just small eye motion down, and the camera pans to below the table to reveal that he is wearing an incredibly fetching pair of pink, I think, high heels. Beautiful shoes on a beautiful man.
Yeah, it's a nice little pullback and reveal.
The actual shining light bit is the look that he does then. So we see the shoes and he just gives a little to Carrie Bradshaw.
It's very knowing, isn't it?
I love it. It is.
I quite like that too. I've just looked him up. I don't recognize him from anything. He was in an episode of Louis as a doctor. I don't know if you've ever watched the TV show Louis, starring
serial
creep Louis C.K. His name is Peter Y. Kim. The Return of Jezebel James, Ugly Betty, Law and Order.
Oh, he's in Hackers. Fuck yeah. I was on a podcast recently, yesterday, talking about the 1995 smash hit Hackers, which is one of Angelina Jolie's first movies. He's He, interestingly, if he's who I think he is, he's this very gender ambiguous cross-dressing character in that as well. So I wonder if this is the dude, if this is a bit of him.
So it would seem.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Would you like to hear my shining light, Tim?
I'd love to. Nothing would bring me more joy.
It was a real attention-grabbing turn by Kim Cattrall, entirely occupying the character of Samantha, after Smith Gerrit, who, by the way, the more time I spend with, the more I like. This is like a...
What? We've gone in different paths. Please go on.
He's a great guy. He's a fantastic partner. He works hard, sure, but he obviously loves Samantha. He's very adaptive around her lifestyle. You know, they're making sacrifices for one another, but I think he takes the breakup like an absolute hero. I reckon he's covering himself in glory.
I reckon he presents as being dumb as a pack of hammers. And the fact that he can't figure out there's anything wrong with him turning up late on Valentine's Day evening, and she's obviously upset about this, and he can't, you know, muster enough act. He's a professional actor. You got to pretend to care.
He's off the clock. Cares. He doesn't need to pretend to care. It's better to react honestly in this instance.
Maybe, but he comes off quite callous and cold, I think. And I actually took a real strong dislike to Smith Gerrit in this particular watch. So it's interesting.
That is interesting. No, I have written here, he's literally the best dude.
Wow.
I don't know. I guess we'll both take each other's findings to our respective next screenings. But I just thought, I mean, do you disagree that he doesn't take the breakup like a champ?
That he does, but I think he takes it so well that he's one of those guys who actually orchestrated it by being a dick. You know, like he wanted to break up, but he couldn't be bothered.
We've got a body of evidence of him not being a dick.
Well, that's true.
Anyhow.
The chemo thing, do you mean?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not even thinking of that. That's in the back of my mind, obviously, but just generally within the movie. He's not perfect. He's late on Valentine's Day. You know, he goes to sleep at 9 p.m. I mean, that's a fair gripe. It'll get pretty tiresome if someone does that. But my shining light actually is when he gets chewed out after he arrives late on Valentine's Day. Kim Cattrall channeling the power of Samantha bellows at him. She's prepared a delicious homemade, handmade series of sushi rolls that she has draped across her naked body in the hopes of his arrival at 7:30 p.m. to eat the sushi from her and eventually, I imagine... they will fuck the ever-loving shit out of one another.
Visceral.
But he arrives late. She's in a robe. There's a stack of sushi in front of her. She's furious, as you've said. And he says, hey, come on, babe, what's the problem here? And she goes, she's angry about the whole state of the relationship, the sacrifices she's made. And she bellows out, enjoy your California handmade roll. And as she says
it, she throws it at him.
She hurls just a big whack of raw fish, and it gives a very satisfying slap against the cool steel of the fridge. And that entire moment I found really great this week.
Well, my new favorite, my new shining light of this this watch is you doing that announcement of the sushi roll like a baseball commentator.
Yeah, look, I tell you, because it was probably ended up being quite loud. It's a little late at night here, so I was wary of really channeling Samantha. But I think I just wound up talking as loudly in some weird made-up character. Some like
good.
Dispassionate but noisy baseball announcer. But
it's a good moment. It's a great moment of the film. It's a moment of tension and fun, because you're like, shit's going down, but it's with Samantha, so there's still an element of fun and levity to this.
Absolutely. Can I say another thing I noticed from this, Tim? Do you think it's weird that catwalk models aren't allowed to smile? And this, this movie's got me thinking about it, but it seems like an odd rule to me.
Yeah. What's that about?
Is everyone, I guess not everyone's allowed to smile. The Buckingham Palace guards famously not allowed to smile at their job. But otherwise, by and large, smiling is, if not encouraged, certainly not, frowned upon.
If you will. It is odd as well, because I think most people look more beautiful when they smile.
And yet, I've noticed that you're not afraid to tell that to every single person you see as you walk past them down the street.
Only the woman. Be fair to me. Only the woman.
That's true. You are, indiscriminate in who you choose to say it to.
As long as they're women.
Yeah, that's the main criteria they have to pass. You're truly a joy to be around. I don't know. Do you think it's odd? Would you be more likely to buy some high couture, some weird bit of fashion if someone smiled at you and said, "This will look fantastic on you"?
You've bowled me over with this observation. I don't know what it's about. Every other thing that's being advertised to us in terms of a service or a product that we wish to buy is being sold using smiling people. You know who's frowning? The people who are using the competitors' products in the ad.
That's
I'm
right.
Always looking at car insurance, and some poor sap hasn't bought the right one from Gecko, and his bloody upside down smile is telling me everything I need to know about calling up that fucking Gecko. What kind of a mascot? How did they land on that for car insurance? Like, what is the relevance between a lizard and not just driving, but specifically protecting your finances in the event that something goes wrong while you're driving? I don't think of a gecko. I wouldn't think of a gecko in 100 years.
No, but
associated with that event.
When you get a gecko with that sort of talent, what, you're just going to let it walk out the door? That gecko has been the anchor of a series of very popular, well-received, and largely funny ads on behalf of Geico Insurance. And, if you let that gecko walk out the door, it's going to be snaffled up by any of the other competitors.
And then who's smiling?
Well,
whoever's got gecko.
Whoever's got
Geico.
Geico.
That's how it works.
You just figured it out then.
Yeah, I did.
You literally resolved. Just backed into the answer to your question.
Look, I think you're right. I want to acknowledge the fact this is a great point that you've come up with, Guy.
Thank you.
Rare? You've really knocked it out of the park.
It's not that rare. I'm a pretty smart guy. A lot of people tell me I'm a smart guy.
I've found Peter Kim's website over here. It's peterkim.com.
That bodes well.
Yes, it has the Weebly favicon. I'm probably saying that wrong. Fave icon. It's the little icon that websites have in the top corner of your browser. So when you save it as a bookmark, it comes up with that picture. He's got the Weebly one, which I know is someone who has some websites made on Weebly. That means he hasn't paid for the professional level. He's on the starter pack. Says, "Welcome. This is the website of actor Peter Kim. Please make yourself comfortable, take a look around, and hire me. Seriously. about me. I'm from New Jersey. Yes, the state that is the butt of many jokes. But seriously, it's an awesome place. Lovely Holy towns, shit. Great schools.
This is too
close
good.
To New York City. Tons of malls, no sales tax. Did I mention no sales tax? That said, I reside in Brooklyn. After doing numerous high school plays and
musicals. How long is this website?
And getting, this is on the front page, baby. And getting through an awkward growth spurt, I attended NYU to study acting. I made my off-Broadway debut in Yoko Ono's rock opera, New York Rock. And yes, Yoko is a genius. And I got to go to the Dakota? Is that a venue? I'm not familiar with the Dakota. And stroke the keys of the white piano. I then made my feature film debut in Hackers, opposite Angelina Jolie. And yes, Angelina is as beautiful in person as she is on
Two
screen.
And yeses in one paragraph? You've got to be out of your mind. That device is, you're lucky to get away with using it once.
He's got headshots on here, he's got a resume. If you scroll down to the bottom, it'll actually tell you that this is the free tier of website you can make on Weebly. Maybe Peter Kim is not the roaring success I had him pegged as. But he's very likable.
Well, certainly the brief glimpse into the biography that you just read for us has endeared me to the fellow no end.
Oh, he's good. He's literally got his whole resume on here. Someone needs to get Peter Kim in some more fucking movies.
Well, you can be that someone, Tim.
Hackers and then Sex in the City and that's it. Come on.
I reckon I could, he lives in Brooklyn. I live in Brooklyn. I should go out for a coffee with this guy.
Could you?
Yeah, I'll have a go at it. I'll get in touch.
Let's get him on the pod. What a great guest get that would be. Fuck me, imagine that.
The Peter Kim from Hackers?
Of Peter Kim, peterkim.com?
That's good.
Can I share something else I wrote down?
Yeah, man. This is an open space. Yo. I want to hear from you.
Thanks, man. Okay. Samantha has reshaped her entire career to be geared to serving the needs of Smith. I am not surprised that she is sick of this dude. She is not only dating him, living with him. If you look behind her, all the shots of the interior of her workspace, there's huge blowing up posters of his TV shows, his magazine front pages, and then just random headshots and tasteful nudes of him blowing up on the wall.
Can I interject briefly? That is her workspace. Please. That is her fit out. That is not...
Yeah.
That's not his call.
It's fucking mad. It is the... what is it called? Home Makeover Extreme Edition of offices. Someone's gone, what do you like? Lego? Cool. We built an entire house of Lego. Hope you kids never change your mind about the things you like. What do you like? Smith Garrett? Cool. He is like the color of paint that we are going to head to toe redecorate this office in. He's inescapable. I'm surprised the relationship lasted as long as it did, to be honest. It's a nightmarish way to interface with a person.
It is undeniably too much. In saying that, though, you know, the idea of painting the walls with Garrett is not, like, the idea of change to the characters in this film is not, it's not, it's entirely unrealistic, you know. It's not a burden. Like, they bounce around houses. You know, if anything, this movie provides an entire misrepresentation of the experience of packing, which is famously one of the worst things you can possibly do. And yet, like, an entire party montage, which is just fan service, is dedicated to the idea of packing being a real laugh.
Yeah. There's so much packing in this film. Packing, a lot of movement.
And moving. God, it's a nightmare. Yeah. I hate taking stock of how much stuff I've accumulated.
It is a disgusting pursuit. It's actually one of the great reminders that we've all got too many objects, eh? I think in this day and age, I think most people could probably benefit from a bit of a slim down on the amount of shit that they own. I certainly could. I'm looking around in the studio, guy. I'm surrounded by bits. Bits everywhere.
Yeah, you're a big bit guy, though. There's a something, I don't know, some vaguely useful sounding, but also absolutely nonsensical New Age movement, where you pick something up, and if it doesn't spark joy in you, you don't need it, and you cast it aside.
It's from a book, isn't it? One of those books I've heard so much about.
Yeah. I think it's from Richard Scarry's, or his books. God, jokes don't work if you don't remember the details.
No, I don't know who Richard Scarry is. You're on your own. Adrift at Sea.
No, you know him. He does the best little word book ever. He does all those weird... Oh, this is a nightmare of a riff. I am so... I am humiliated.
Go back to school, mate. Jump back into your bloody textbooks teaching you how to do improv. What are these books? Are they like the ones that you keep buying people for Christmas and stuff, and it's like little words of advice or something, and it fits in your pocket?
You are going to remember his very distinct animation style.
I'm going to Google it. I'm right next to a computer. My computer, not someone else's.
Very
was
good.
His name Richard what?
Scarry. S-C-A-R-R-Y.
What do people do all day? Oh, okay. Oh, yep. Children's books.
Yes. Did I not say children's books at any point in that process?
I didn't hear it, but that's not to say definitely that you didn't say it. They're kind of a lot of anthropomorphized animals doing things. This one's very familiar. The Busy World of Richard Scarry, yeah. Which has got a worm driving an apple car on the front. That's delight.
That is some shit you remember.
Indelible mark on my subconscious. I love what he's done with the place here. It's like animals playing out the roles of humans, and all the titles are kind of... like the busy, busy world and what do people do all day. It's about like children's perception that adults are just kind of running around doing busy work, which I have to attest as an adult, if we've got any kids listening, absolutely true. We're not achieving anything anymore. I think we peaked in about the late 60s.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. We're not really... I speak for myself and we speak for ourselves. It doesn't feel like there's a... I'm always in buildings. I go up, like, you know, you go up a lot of levels in a building nowadays, and you're sitting in a room full of, like, young-looking people, and you're like, none of us have any idea how this thing is upright.
Yeah.
Like, no, there's, you know, 20 people in a room, 40 floors up.
Fucking
no one with a fucking clue how we got there.
We need to get back to basics before it's too late, eh? Do you know that the human species forgot how to make concrete for 300 years? There was evidence of concrete. I can't remember where exactly. Maybe ancient Greece. There's evidence of it up until this particular period. And then everyone forgot how to make it for 3 centuries. And then they figured it out again. What if we do that with basic structures?
That is incredible. You'd like to think someone's written it down somewhere, but
I think we're so focused on going viral these days, no one's paying enough attention to how a bloody A-frame stays up.
You gone viral lately, Tim?
Absolutely not, but I'll die trying.
Won't we all? And that is the greatest thought of all.
It's horrible.
So... have you got any other observations, quips, quibbles?
Mate, I got tons.
Moments of joy. What did you? Yep. What got under your skin the most this week?
Under my skin the most. Well, I've actually got two moments I really enjoyed, and at the risk of burning future shining lights, I wouldn't mind. Just
effort, man. You'll dig deep week after week.
Yeah, I love that. I really like the picture of Big eating dinner by himself on New Year's, surrounded by salubrious folk who were just drinking and smooching up a storm around him, because he seems contented. We're supposed to feel sorry for him because it's like, oh, this poor sad old man's fucked his life up. He had it all: beautiful penthouse apartment, gorgeous writer wife. He should be celebrating his first New Year's and his third marriage. But no, he's eating by himself. But he looks like he's having a fucking good go of that steak. and just a lovely glass of Pinot. Oh,
I find the character's decisions of places and ways to celebrate holidays that, you know, the way they talk about them, you know, will be triggering for them. Absolutely fascinating. There is all sorts of self-harm taking place. Like Carrie and Miranda's choice of restaurant for Valentine's Day, when they are both processing pretty deep cut heartbreak, is mind-boggling. They choose a place that is so fitted out with helium-inflated heart balloons that you can barely see 5 inches in front of yourself for low-hanging, like, red foil, I guess, you know, attached to the balloons. The staff are wearing...
It's a real...
Oh, I mean, it
sorry,
seems...
You finish the thought.
It seems like the art director was just having a bit of fun because it's so deeply impractical. When Carrie tries to storm out in a huff, and I do usually get a little laugh out of this, she tangles herself in the low-hanging foils from the balloons. And I feel like they were playing that for laughs. But, you know, all the staff are wearing angel wings. Like, this is a restaurant geared so specifically towards romance. And they just gleefully go out. And, like, then big doing that on New Year's Eve, it's like, if you're feeling upset, mate, don't go out to a fancy restaurant where everyone's partying and have a meal for one without engaging with anyone.
I love that he did. I love that that was his call. And that actually does genuinely feel very New York to me. It's like, I don't give a shit how I'm feeling. I'm going to get out in the community and interface with my favorite restaurants and places to be. I love that. It feels very metropolitan, very urban.
I'm happy to hear it, actually. I like going out for a meal myself as well. But given the circumstance, I don't know. Happy to see you enjoying it, though. It's a lovely... What do you think of Chris Noth's performance in this movie?
I'm into it. I think it's better than he does in the second movie, frankly. How about you?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. There's a few bits where he's sort of just... He just seems to be in a bit of disarray. He seems to be a bit of a mess.
As an actor.
I can't tell.
Character.
I can't tell if it's like a performance decision by Chris Noth to... because Big comes across as quite aloof throughout this film. And I can't necessarily discern whether or not it's a character choice or an actor who's just very relaxed on set. But like the scene where... Carrie, you know, spills out her disgusting line about colouring inside or outside the lines, and she goes home and Big's sort of stumbling around the balcony with his tie askew, and it looks bizarre. Like, it looks to me, you know, if you're watching a movie and, you know, you don't notice things, and that's the intention of art direction and the mise-en-scene and all that stuff. And then sometimes if you're making something, or if you see footage of yourself on camera, or you look in a mirror before you're about to do something and you've dressed yourself, like, there's a certain difference, I think, in the standard between a tie being askew on a set and you trying to make your tie look askew for a performance. And it's the job of...
Like, it's more pronounced.
Yeah, like, you know, a wardrobe person will get it just right, so they know how it will look on camera to read perfect. And you'll get an approximation of it that could wind up looking goofy as all hell and terrible. And there's a
you
scene...
You think that's what's happened?
Yeah, when he's stumbling around the balcony, his tie... Like, it's the same thing as, like, what I noticed with those awful, wide, fucking Caprese suit pants. It looks to me like wardrobes absolutely nailed the placement of the askew tie, and then Chris Noth is like, just before Michael Mattress Pikelet King calls action, he sort of gestures over to wardrobe and he's like, don't worry, I got this, and moves it like half an inch, and it just looks so fucking hopeless. And
why have you got so little faith in the good Reverend Chris Noth and so much faith in this completely unknown wardrobe department that you're laying the blame at his feet?
This is before he got his act together and started his church. This is a man adrift, probably awash with cocaine and booze from the high-rise success of Sex and the City and whatever, I guess, advertisements or, you know, special appearances he booked on other sitcoms. I feel like we're watching a man in between shooting this movie whose life is spiraling out of control before he found God and started preaching.
Actually, on that, there's a bit where What is that? I think it's when Carrie is around. It's the night before the wedding, and she's hanging out with the gals. And Big rings her. And is he, like, at work? And he's kind of... he's in front of some books, and he says, Carrie, there's something I have to tell you. And in my head, I went, I can't read. Like, he's gotten away with it up until this point. And it's never, like... that bit's never actually answered.
Yeah.
The thing that he directly has to tell her. And I'm like... fuck, maybe he can't read.
He's
which
just...
harkens back to our theory that he also has no idea what's going on with the stock market, in spite of the fact that he has been charged with the wardship of potentially billions of US dollars.
It absolutely colours his every action. The man is perpetually just out of his depth. A wedding, you say?
But
sure, I'll show up literally to the venue and then not marry the woman I've been in love with for 10 years because she's wearing a veil before walking into the wedding venue we have booked, so I'm not 100% certain I'm going to be marrying her. Which is, if you boil it down to its essence, the logic that underpins his jilting her at the altar. It's like, I needed to know it was us two. What, and not you and someone else who accidentally shows up to your wedding dressed almost identically to your wife and you accidentally marry? The guy is a fucking lunatic.
What else have we got here? A balanced fund? Some mutual fund worth $500 million? Yes, that sounds like definitely within my wheelhouse.
I'm pretty sure when they're preparing dinner and vegetables and Carrie brings up the idea of her selling the apartment so they can share the financial deed to the house, he's chopping chili or capsicum or peppers or something on a chopping board. I might be misremembering this, but after he's chopped up all of the vegetables, I'm pretty sure he scrapes them straight into a rubbish bin. The guy is slightly off.
He's seen Jamie Oliver on the telly and he's got it fucking cutting things up. That's what cooking's all about. And he doesn't know that there is a second step to it. You just produce a knife, get it nice and sharp.
I can do that.
There's definitely something I'm capable of. I too am a chef. Here's all the things I am. Marriage material. A chef. Definitely somebody should be put in charge of a lot of money. Can I read books? Let me answer your question with a question. How do you feel about us going out for dinner instead?
And then when he has to write her love letters to win her back, instead of doing anything of his own accord, he literally transcribes an entire book as though to prove he can both read and type. And somehow, this is enough to win back the woman he jilted at a wedding in front of 200 of New York's best and brightest.
It's not fucking romance, it's plagiarism. For God's sake, is there an original thought in your head?
Do you know another beautiful little, before we put a pin in this, a beautiful little big moment to round off this fantastic conversation about his motivations and intelligence is when Carrie is going to pick up the expensive shoes, the $525 shoes at the penthouse apartment, which they never lived in and have sold. She runs into Big, who's, you know, just behind the one of the double doors in the wardrobe he built for them in happier days. And she walks in, and he's got sort of the quite a guilty and mischievous glint in his eye as he's carrying the two $525 shoes, which suggests his life had spiraled so badly and he was feeling so low. He was about to put on a little show for himself where he paraded around the apartment performing in character as the woman he jilted but still is madly in love with. And the fact that Carrie's arrival, while I'm happy for them as a couple and their reunion, deprives us of what would undoubtedly be the highlight of not just this, but any moment in the Sex and the City franchise is devastating.
Well, we could all learn a lot from Paul. Sometimes you just need to put on some high heels and give yourself a little show.
Absolutely. Hey,
not to undercut that moment as well, but that's definitely an attempt at a Cinderella moment, right? Like, that's why they use shoes, and they've kind of got that shot of him holding the shoe.
Before
like
I answer your question, I'd like to say I hate the fact that you tried to undercut this very deft and touching piece of cinema by suggesting it is emulated or aped in some way the story of Cinderella.
I retract my previous statement. I'd like to end the podcast before I embarrass myself further.
Not at all, man. It's been if nothing else, and this might be, this is an interesting thing, I think, which Carla's our experience so far, is while the screenings of the movie are undeniably worse alone and really quite challenging, the fact that we're deprived of one another as we watch it makes the recording of the conversation sort of, it feels like it's tinged with a little more happiness than previous experiences. It's early doors, I know, but I think maybe, you know, there's there is sort of unforeseen value in these individual watches, in that it's
you're so right.
It's a joy to speak with you.
Absence makes the heart grow fonder. And whilst previously we could kind of let off steam during the movie because we're watching it together, now we're suffering in silence and capturing the obvious love and affection that these two best friends have for each other on the mic for your enjoyment. So look, hopefully you're having fun. You're enjoying yourself out there. We'll catch you in the next episode. Guy, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
And to you, my friend, have a fantastic and safe honeymoon.
Thank you very much.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. He sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.